10 years ago, Hurricane Katrina forced the NFL's New Orleans Saints to move all of their home games to other stadiums. The Superdome was their home turf, and thousands of hurricane survivors had sought shelter there. The Saints finally returned to the Superdome to play on September 25th, 2006, and this is one of the first things that happened that night.
Look out! Right through! A kick block by Steve Gleason! It is scooped and scored by Curtis DeLoach!
That was just 90 seconds into the game. Steve Gleason blocked an Atlanta Falcons punt. It was recovered in the end zone for a touchdown. The Saints went on to win the game 23-3. They eventually won the Super Bowl. There is a 9-foot statue now of the play outside the Superdome, while the real Steve Gleason is paralyzed. He has ALS. What has happened to Steve Gleason and what's transpired with some of New Orleans' best-known residents makes up a special issue of ESPN the magazine. It's called Beyond the Breach, and it's about New Orleans 10 years later. Wright Thompson spent several weeks in the city for the story to prepare the entire issue. In fact, Wright, welcome to Here and Now.
Thanks. It's a pleasure.
How did you choose the people that you wanted to profile in this issue?
I let them sort of choose themselves, frankly. I talked to many, many people. Only 5 or 6 of them actually made the story. And I had this great conversation with my wife in the middle of reporting. I was down there for, I don't know, probably 7 weeks all told. And I described to her the grand literary theory of what I was doing. And so she sort of looked at me and goes, "Oh, you're making Love Actually about New Orleans."
Love Actually.
Yeah. I'm like, well, yes, that's exactly what I'm doing. So in my house, the story has become referred to as Katrina Actually.
Katrina Actually. Well, it begins with the story of Steve Gleason. This is a one-time defensive back for the Saints. He is now, as we said, in a wheelchair. Why did you begin with him, and what does his story represent about New Orleans 10 years after Katrina?
What you see in that opening scene and throughout the arc of both Steve and the story and, you know, Steve's life separate from this is that he is going to lose this fight, and yet he continues to fight every day, which is either foolish or heroic or something. But ultimately what it is, that's what living is. It's choosing to fight despite knowing how the fight will end. And that's very much central to New Orleans living in such a precarious place, balanced between nature and man's arrogant belief that he can control it. So I thought that was sort of exactly where the story needed to begin.
And the fight that you're talking about with Steve Gleason is his fight with ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. So describe his story as you tell it.
He was one of those few professional athletes who actually lives in the city they represent. Most of the time, they live in the bubble of fame and of their own, in a myth of their own creation. And fans want them desperately to be something, and they want it so bad that they just create it out of people, even though almost always it isn't true. And Steve was one of those guys who you would see out and who lived in the city and who was a part of the world around him and was beloved long before ALS. I mean, him blocking the punt was the culmination of a love affair, not the beginning of it. And it wasn't just that this no-name guy did this. It was the one person who best understood the city of New Orleans and its people blocked the punt. It was like they blocked the punt. And he retired. He's a big reader. If you go look at his bookshelves, it's just heartbreaking, from, you know, 100 Years of Solitude to, you know, Cormac McCarthy to, you know, Catch 22. I mean, it is the bookshelf of a mind at work. And to see him now stripped of so many pieces of the life he lived because of ALS, it's devastating to see up close.
You, one of the things you write about is his relationship with his son, who's almost 4 years old now. And he's looking to his son's future and sowing the seeds for it right now. And this, I think, is very much in alignment with the story that you're telling about the New Orleans spirit and sowing the seeds for the future. Can you tell us what Steve Gleason's doing?
He has recorded hundreds of short 5-minute videos for Rivers to have when he's either gone or can no longer communicate with his son, that are all the things that a boy should learn from his father: how to tie shoes, how to change a flat tire, what to do when you get your heart broken, how to whistle. All of the things that a boy should know how to do that he is aware that Rivers might not have the chance to learn from him. And so these things are just there waiting on a hard drive for whenever Rivers needs them.
What about another character who you tell the story of? This is Shaq Brown. Tell us about him.
Shaq Brown is a youth football coach in the city of New Orleans. And in New Orleans, especially in the poor neighborhoods around where the housing projects were before the storm, youth football coaches are where the rubber meets the road. I mean, they are the difference between kids going one way or kids going the other. Shaq Brown is one of those people who, if you were between the ages of 15 and 35 and you grew up in either the Lafitte or the Iberville Housing Project, everybody knows Shaq Brown. He's coached you, he's coached your brothers, and he is one of those guys who spends his own money, raises money, spends his own time, and tries to pluck up as many kids a generation as he can.
What has happened to him since Katrina?
Shaq is starting to coach a new team, and he's, you know, probably not going back to that area. He's from the Iberville Housing Project, which no longer exists. All of the projects were torn down post-Katrina, and there's a huge affordable housing crisis in the city now. And he is one of those people who is doing the best he can, still trying to help kids. He's got a team out in New Orleans East now, and he's one of those guys who, you know, if you go to New Orleans in 25 years, and you go find a playground and check enough of them, you'll find Shaq Brown coaching kids trying to save somebody.
There's a man you introduced us to named Chris Rose. He is a reporter who chronicled Hurricane Katrina for the Times-Picayune, the New Orleans newspaper, which tried to stay open through the entire hurricane, really did an amazing job. And his stories were more or less a contribution to history. Why did you write about Chris and tell us about the man himself?
Chris is an unbelievable writer. You know, won one Pulitzer, finalist for another. He, like a lot of people, struggled after the storm. He had some drug addiction issues, multiple trips to rehab, lost his wife and his house, and ultimately he was out of journalism. He was waiting tables for a little while, which was embarrassing because readers would come in and recognize him and be like, "What are you writing these days?" And he'd be like, "Well, I'm writing your order." And he, you know, I've been out with him in public, and people, strangers come up to him. I mean, I've seen it multiple times. People come up to him and tell them how much his work meant to them, and they tell them what happened to them during Katrina. People break down and just ugly cry. I mean, sobbing. And they walk away, and they feel better, and he feels worse, and he doesn't go out much. And so he is very much gets invested with, you know, random strangers, bad energy, and bad memories. And in the last few months, I think because of the forced catharsis of the anniversary, you know, he's finally got a job in local journalism again. He's working for a radio station there, got a column in New Orleans Magazine. And, it, you know, I didn't know if any of that was going to happen at the beginning of the summer when I started reporting. And so it was, I don't know, I was happy that there was, that was the end of his particular story in the summer before the anniversary, that after 10 long, long years, things are looking up.
I want to bring this back in closing to Steve Gleason, formerly of the New Orleans Saints. He, after he was diagnosed, in fact, fairly recently, wrote a letter to the city of New Orleans. And because he has ALS, he's speaking now part of that letter with the help of a computer. So let's hear a little bit of that audio.
"I helped win the first playoff game in Saints history. I have a Super Bowl ring and the 9-foot statue outside my old office, the Superdome. But what I enjoy most about New Orleans is the infatuated, idealist citizens and the pervasive, wholly nourishing culture of family."
That again is Steve Gleason. What does that letter and what do his sentiments contribute, do you think, to the story of New Orleans post-Katrina?
You know, it took me 25,000 words and it took him like 300. It's sort of disheartening to write a story in which at least two of your characters are better writers than you are. And he really gets at the essential heart of the city. I encourage anyone to, you can find the text of his letter if you want to read the whole thing, either ESPN.com. It's the group that got him to do it, where you can read it. It's evacuteer.org. But it really, I wish I'd have written it, you know, and it really gets at the weird, complicated place that is New Orleans, and how living there is making a choice to fight despite knowing that there will be hurricanes and there will be disasters, and that life is fragile, especially on the very edge of the continent below sea level, and yet life continues. And I think that is the ultimate and purest expression of what it means to both be from New Orleans or just simply to love it.
Wright Thompson, senior writer for ESPN, the magazine. His story called Beyond the Breach is in the new issue of ESPN's magazine. In fact, it is the entire new issue. It's the first time the magazine has featured a single writer on a single subject. Well done, Wright, and thanks a lot for talking to us about it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.